Psalm 3 is the first of the psalms that has a title. The editors and organizers have put it there. Nearly all the psalms do, but we just haven't met any yet. And the title of this psalm reads, A Psalm of David. So this is called a mizmor, a psalm. In other words, something to be played, plucked on the harp, and sung. When he fled from his son Absalom. Well, the story of Absalom is in 2 Samuel 14:25-19:4. What are we saying? Are we saying that David wrote it on that occasion back in the year 999 BC? Possibly. Unlikely. There's no reason for that. What you're more doing is, David is the kind of legendary figure. I mean, there was a David, but we know nearly nothing about him. But he's the kind of the founder of this state. And they looked to him as the great hero, and no doubt he was, like King Arthur would have been a great hero in ancient Britain, you know. So he was the great hero, and he was a musician, and he sung in the court of Saul, and so he becomes the figure under whom all the psalms are put. So they sometimes suggest to you a story from the Bible that would be a nice background story to read and bring you into the mood of the psalm. And it's a sad story, David and Absalom, his son, who rebelled against his father, and you know that beautiful text, David says, Absalom, my son, Absalom, my son, when he was kind of killed by Jehu, etc. And he weeps over his death of his son. And here you've got, as though David was praying this at that time when he's got when there's a revolution going on, he's got so many enemies, you might like to think of Jesus praying it. Matthew 27, I've got there. He trusts in God, say the people at the cross. Let God save him now if he wants to. He said, I'm God's son. So they're slinging off at Jesus. Now look at the psalm. Oh Yahweh, how many are my foes? How many are rising up against me? How many are saying to me, no saving help will come to you from God? So this is a psalm to be read when it's pretty grim, when everyone seems against you, when things are going very badly for you and you're feeling lonely and abandoned. You ever got the message? I think you all know this feeling. Well, this psalm fits that feeling because it's written precisely for that, crying out to God because that's what they're saying to me. A couple of things I want to comment on it before I move on. Firstly, this word here, S-E-L-A-H in English lettering, appears every now and then in the Psalms, and no one's quite sure what it means. In the New Revised Standard Version, it'll just say pause. From my knowledge, and I don't know any more than anybody else on it, but I've just read all I can on it, it would mean, a musical interlude. Like, in other words, you're playing the harp, and you're singing, oh Yahweh, how many are you? You got it? The music. And when you get to this, no saving help will come to you from God, the singing stops and the music pauses, continues, so that you've got a feeling moment where you can get into the mood of it. And maybe that's what this Selah means. But I do want to do two other things with you before I move on. One is to look at that word me there. And the other is to look at saving help, which is a key concept right through the Bible and particularly in the Psalms. Me is obviously a first-person objective pronoun, okay? Hebrew has exactly that. Every language would have it. But in this case, that's not what's used. So I want you to... I can't tell you how to translate this. I can't do it for you, but I want to at least tell you what I know about it. 144 times in the Psalms, there's only 150 of them, so it happens frequently. It doesn't happen in every psalm. Sometimes it'll happen often in a psalm. The word nephesh is used here. Not a pronoun, but nephesh. What's it mean? Sometimes it's translated, very often in your translation, soul. My soul longs for you. And that's an all right word if you think of soul music. You know, my soul, my longing, my desire, all that stuff. That's good. But if you think in a Greek term and a metaphysical term of soul and body, it's wrong. So my soul longs for you, but my body doesn't. This is my whole being. The best I can translate it is the way I have there. It's my whole being as receiving the life force and the vital energy. The French does it perfectly. I can't do it in English, but the élan vital of French is perfect for this. The nefesh, your driving power, love, eros, you know, all that stuff. That's what it's talking about. So when it says there in the text, how many are saying to me, it's not just that they're saying it to me, they're saying it to me whose life force is ebbing away, whose yearning is not being met, who longs for life but isn't having... You get it? It's got a whole lot of emotion and feeling and psychic movement involved in it, not just the simple pronoun. And there's the classical text, Genesis 2:7. With Yahweh, God formed humankind. That's a translation of Adam. It's not a bloke, it's humanity. Formed humankind from the dust of the ground and breathed into the human nostrils the breath of life. And so humankind, Adam, as distinct from everything else that had been created up to this point, became a living nefesh. A living, yearning, communing, longing, vital, creative, all the élan vital that we human beings have that the rest of creation doesn't have. Unless you read Teilhard de Chardin, and I think he might be well right in what he says, but we normally think of ourselves as unique in this. Is that all right? So, there's another expression there, saving help. That's how I've translated it. It's the verb, or the noun, is Yeshua, saving help, and the verb to give saving help, or to save, is Hoshia. That's the Hebrew. And this is a key point. When you ask to be saved, that's how we often translate it, it doesn't mean protect me from having to face this. We have to face death, we have to face reality, we have to face sickness, we have to face all kinds of things. We have to face broken relationships, we have to face a dreadful letter we just received. We have to face, you know, anything, or the elections that just happened that might disappoint you. We have to face reality, don't we? War, violence, famine, injustice. So we're not asking God to pull us out of it, because you can't be pulled out of it. It's real. But what we're asking for is that we're not alone in it, and that we are open to receive the grace that God is giving me and you to cope in this moment, because we all can cope with the present. But we're asking to be sustained, helped, not left alone. It's got all that stuff. Is that okay? So that's really quite key to understand this verb. And the key text, of course, again, the classical text, is Exodus chapter 14, the crossing of the Red Sea, which I'll read to you. As Pharaoh drew near, the Israelites looked back, and there were the Egyptians advancing on them. In great fear, the Israelites cried out to Yahweh, and Moses said to the people, "Don't be afraid, stand firm, and see the saving help, or salvation, that Yahweh will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you'll never see again. Yahweh will fight for you. You have only to be still." Let God do it through you. He will protect you. He will bring you through this dreadful situation. You've got to face it, but he'll bring you through it. Thus Yahweh saved Israel that day from the Egyptians. And one other thing, this is such an important concept in the Hebrew Bible. Look at all these names, and I could give you many more, that are based on that verb. Joshua, you can see it's like Yeshua, can't you? Joshua, and Joshua is the name of Jesus, of course. Jesus is the Greek Jesus is the Greek form of Joshua. And so Hosea, again, see it from the noun, Hoshea. I'm giving you the English translations, but the name comes from it. Elisha. Eli is my God is Savior. Sha, the same word. Isaiah, it doesn't sound like in English, but Yah at the end is Yahweh. So Yahweh saves is Isaiah. So it's a very common root of many Hebrew names. Now the text continues. But you, Yahweh, are a shield around me. You're my glory. You lift up my head. Lift my head up in pride and joy and encouragement. Even though, as he's already said, people are oppressing me, he's being unjustly judged. God is his glory. The most beautiful text I know of that you're probably aware of it is Irenaeus back in the second century, which he says, the glory of God is a person who's fully alive, and full human life is to see God. So, like the glory of a parent, his children who are beautifully happy and so on. So, you're my glory. When his enemies see that Yahweh is protecting him, they're struck with awe with the marvelous action of God at the Red Sea or in this psalmist's life. Holy, 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 the Lord Yahweh of hosts, the whole earth is full of his glory. And the prophet Habakkuk, who lived in the years just prior to the destruction of Jerusalem, encouraged his contemporaries facing collapse of their country to trust in Yahweh, and that's what he says in chapter 2, verse 14, the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of Yahweh as the waters cover the earth. And the psalm continues, and this is all the psalm. When I cry to you, Yahweh, you answer me from your holy mountain. Obviously the holy mountain is Mount Moriah, that's Jerusalem, the temple. And when he says that, the music takes over and we live with that thought for a while in the temple. And then he continues, I lie down to rest and I sleep. So obviously he's come to peace. It's a dreadful situation he's in, but he's crying out for God's protective help. But he's so confident in it that he actually can sleep. I wake up again, for Yahweh sustains me. I'm not afraid of the vast army that's ranged against me on every side. Rise up, Yahweh. At the beginning of the psalm he said, my enemies are rising up and saying, there's no help for you from God. So he says now to Yahweh, you rise up. Rise up, save me. Here it is again. Oh my God, for you strike all my enemies, you break the teeth of the irreligious. Pause. Up till now, I can imagine Jesus praying the whole psalm. I actually can't imagine him saying that. You might be able to, but I can't, because actually his understanding of God is different. Love your enemies. God will love them so they'll change. He's not suggesting, Jesus wouldn't say, you'll strike them and break their teeth. Here, let's look at some of the New Testament statements. You've heard that it was said, and this is one little example of it, love your neighbor and hate your enemy, break their teeth. But I say to you, says Jesus, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Abba, of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good. He sends his rain on the righteous and on the unrighteous. Be perfect, therefore, the kind of goal you're to aim at, the telos, the way you're facing, the kind of perfection I'm asking of you, says Jesus, is the kind of perfection your Father has. That is, love perfection. Even, and don't let your enemies destroy your heart. Don't let them get you to revenge. Don't turn September the 11th into a bombing of these countries. Don't oppose terrorism with state terror. Not only doesn't it work, it's unchristian. It also is totally counterproductive, and the spiral of violence will never come to an end. That's what Jesus seems to be saying. So I'm suggesting that this psalm, when Jesus got to that bit, he probably cried a bit. And he might have. That's right. Saving help is from you, Yahweh. And I just commenting on that, Psalm 62, God alone my soul waits in silence, for my hope is from God. He alone is my rock, my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be shaken. On God rests my salvation, same word, my saving help, and my glory, there it is again. My mighty rock, my refuge is my God. Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. And to conclude, Psalm 3, the last words are, your blessing is for your people. Here's the word blessing. God's outpouring of his gracious favor. It's fitting that a psalm which celebrates God's loving presence and activity in favor of those who appeal to him should end with a cry of assurance in Yahweh's blessing of his chosen people. And Isaiah 61 verse 9 also reads, their descendants shall be known among the nations, their offspring among the peoples. All who see them shall acknowledge that they are a people whom Yahweh has blessed. So, Psalm 3, it's a brief psalm. It's only how many verses there? 8 verses. But it's a painful one, but it's a trusting one. And, I hope that's the best I can offer for you.